This is American DA Live, brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. Landscaper's Corner has the largest selection of natural stone in our area. Give them a call, 225-9433. Ray Larson, good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
And I think the worst part of your job is you're always having to fool with this silly law thing. You're always just having to knock yourself out and jump through these legal hoops, and we have a unique situation this morning in that. Here's something that I've learned from you over the years, is if a case is done and closed, etc., I can't shut you up on it, but if it's not, I can't get you to say anything about it. So we've got a unique situation this morning, and if you would describe that situation to us and then introduce our guest.
Okay. There was a guy that was from Winchester that was prosecuted he was prosecuted for selling drugs, and those drugs were involved in a person's death. Okay. The federal U.S. Attorney's Office, Todd Bradbury, prosecuted that case, and there was a conviction, but the Supreme Court came down with a ruling that kind of changed the rules, and the Supreme Court frequently, most of their rulings have some retroactive effect, and it did in this case. So this case is now sort of up in the air, and we're not going to talk about it.
Okay.
Todd called me this week after we'd scheduled this thing and told me all about it. And I said, well, hell, Todd, let's talk about the whole concept of drug-involved deaths and how can we place responsibility for some of these deaths on the people that are selling this poison around our community and communities all over this country. And so Todd said, okay. And so I've given him today a copy of what the state proposal is, because everybody's climbing on board on this heroin thing. And Kentucky's no different. Katie Stein from Fort Thomas, Northern Kentucky, is a senator, and she has made a proposal that we'll talk about. Now, let me tell you about Todd Bradbury.
Sure.
Todd Bradbury, he was an outstanding criminal defense attorney for many years. And
you've seen him on the news.
Yes. Or as we say, Jess. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is we recruited him. We had a vacancy in our office, and somebody said, why don't we talk to Todd Bradbury, and I said, we're wasting our breath. Yeah, why would we do that? And so they said, well, let us approach him. And so they did, and guess what? Todd said, sure, this sounds interesting. I guess he said, this. We'll ask him about that. And then he worked for us for, 20 minutes or so, and then dumped us like a bad habit.
Got a better offer, huh, Todd?
He did.
20 minutes, 3.5 years, something like that.
Yeah. And so he now is working at the U.S. Attorney's Office and has basically, I guess, Todd, you've sort of are doing the drug prosecutions over there, a lot of them anyway.
Yes, I'm in the drug unit at the U.S. Attorney's Office, and focus of the majority of the cases is with heroin.
Right. Well, I want to, where'd you go to school?
University of Kentucky.
Yeah. And you're from Shepherdsville area?
Mm-hmm. Mount Washington.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Todd is a graduate of Bullitt East, right, along with Abigail in our office. And so you went to law school at UK?
I did.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about defending. Tell me some of the problems and issues and pressures that go with being a criminal defense attorney. Because, you always hear How could you defend that guy? You know, you hear that all the time. And so how could you defend that guy? Tell us about the mindset of a criminal defense attorney.
Well, you know, everyone is entitled to the same rights. As you well know from prosecuting cases for many years, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, the son of the wealthiest family in town or, you know, you're dirt poor and living on the streets. The Constitution applies equally to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and lots of people get in trouble with the criminal justice system for substance abuse related issues, things that drive them to break into cars or sell drugs or steal items. You know, you see the same patterns over and over.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of criminals are not, you know, people that would make you run and hide and fear for your life. Many are, you know, more of the average Joe that, you know, made a big mistake.
Made some bad choices.
Absolutely.
Did your experience as a defense attorney make you a stronger prosecutor? I would think it would.
I think it gives you a good balance.
Yeah.
You know, when you have worn many different hats, you can see things from both sides.
How's working for the feds different than working for the state?
It's similar.
Ray says you all don't work as much.
Well, he'd be wrong about that.
Okay. Oh.
I don't know. He's just saying that because Kerry Harvey's probably listening.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. You know, at Ray's office, it's general prosecution, so you can have everything from a flagrant non-support case to a death penalty case. At the U.S. Attorney's Office, it's more specialized. For instance, I'm in the drug unit. We have prosecutors in white collar, in all different areas of the law, and, you know, prison litigation, numerous things that you can specialize in cases as opposed to the just.
Hey, let me ask you this. One of these jerks that was involved in this Boston Marathon bombing, just yesterday, the feds announced that they would be seeking the death penalty against that guy. Tell me what's the process, because they go through a real serious kind of a process in making that decision. Are you familiar with any of that?
I've not had any death penalty cases at the U.S. Attorney's Office, but you're correct. It is a lengthy process. It's, you know, has to go through Washington. It's nothing that is decided at the local level. For instance, out of our office, Mr. Harvey would not make that call. It would have to be approved by Washington, and it's a very lengthy process to even get the go-ahead to seek the death penalty.
Well, and this character called Eric Holder, who is the attorney general, he doesn't believe in the death penalty. Opponent of the death penalty, yet his agency is
going to seek it.
Yeah. Now, at any rate, I could go for days on that.
Back to the drug thing. I'm going to play devil's advocate with you a little bit here. If I sell you an illegal drug and I tell you, Ray, this could kill you, and you take it and you die, I wonder if I mean, I'm obviously guilty of selling you a drug that was illegal, but I don't know that your blood's on my hands. I told you it could kill you.
Well, let me give you a similar analogous situation, and that's you get in the car with a drunk driver, and you know he's drunk. You're probably drunk, but you know he's drunk. You know that getting in a car and driving or going somewhere with a driver that's under the influence could cause your serious physical injury or death. You get in it and do it, and you end up running into a tree or running into a car and killing the passenger.
Yeah.
That's the juries in Kentucky will take that into consideration probably in the penalty phase. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you can meet the elements of perceiving the risk, consciously disregarding that risk, and a death occurs, but the penalty in that kind of a situation in Kentucky, if the manslaughter second degree, is 5 to 10 years, and they will frequently take that into consideration in the penalty phase. Isn't that your experience, Todd?
It is, and the thing that's interesting about the federal statute that criminalizes the distribution with an overdose is the statute is distribution, is trafficking in drugs. The overdose death is an enhancement provision for the distribution. So it's not that
enhancement
person,
means something to add on?
Something to add on
it
to the penalty.
It increases the penalty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Yeah.
So instead of charging an individual federally with a federal homicide for trafficking in drugs that led to an overdose, the charge is trafficking in drugs, and then the jury has to find the additional aggravating factor of causing the overdose death.
That's interesting. We're going to take a break. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-877-777-0590. Or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. 20 minutes after 9, time to get the highest.
Listen to News Talk 590 WVLK live anywhere, anytime at WVLKAM.com.
And we're back. Our regular is Ray Larson, our Commonwealth attorney. Our guest this morning, U.S. Assistant Attorney Todd Bradbury. And let's go to the phones right now. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello. Hey, Jack. I was calling to say I know a little bit of the subject. For the last year, I've been a fairly heavy heroin user myself or other opiates.
Uh-huh.
I'm 7 days clean, thank goodness. Good for me. And I'm in a program trying to put my life back together. But my wife and family members have opened up and found themselves being angry at the people I've been buying stuff from. And I just don't like the idea of them being prosecuted. As I tell them, don't be angry at them, be angry at me. I'm a grown man. I knew what I was buying, and all they're doing is giving me what I wanted. You know, they never influenced me. You know, I wanted my drug, and that's who I got it from.
How did you start, and what did it escalate to, and how long did it take?
I started probably good 7 years ago, and just, I had a chance to abuse that, someone had an OxyContin, and I was like, well, I wanted to see what the fuss was about. No plans of starting that up, and
right.
Unfortunately, I figured out what the fuss was about, and just kind of spiraled from there.
Did you feel, you weren't hooked the first time, obviously.
No, I didn't get heavily hooked until like the last 2 or 3 years.
Okay, and so it started with OxyContin, and then what?
Then it was mostly Percocets, Perc 30s, and then, of course, about 2 years ago, a little bit before heroin blew up in Lexington, I started getting it because at the time it was cheaper than the Percocets.
Plus the state is really clamped down on those prescription meds. They got harder to get, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a big part for the heroin. It's easier to get.
Is it easy to get heroin in Lexington?
Oh, yeah. If I wanted to and I had the money, there's a place I know that I could go right now and get it.
And what does it cost, and how much do you get for your money?
Usually I would buy a pack, which would be enough to, one syringe full, to get high once. That would cost me $30, $40. That would be about a quarter gram.
Now, how long would that buzz last?
No, that lasts me the day.
So you'd be.
I think I've probably been more fairly conservative than most people. But yeah, that would usually last me for the day. So that'd be $30 a day.
All right. Since you're being so candid with us, and you don't have to answer any of these questions, but since you are, what we talk about on this show is the fact that most crime can be linked to alcohol and drugs, especially things like robberies and burglaries and what have you.
Well, because even if you have,
if you're only a $40 a day guy, which is plenty, but if that's all you're doing, still that's a lot of money. Have you stolen money to pay for your habit?
I have it. Lots. I can understand why people do, because it gets a hold and you just got to have it. But I've done a lot of, you know, lying and doing things behind my wife's back, pawning a lot of my belongings. You know, I haven't wanted to steal from other people, but I can certainly understand why some people would, because you just get to where you've got to have it. And, you know, it's not even so much about getting high as just feeling normal and not being, you know, sick and all that.
So are you 7 days clean? Are you over the worst of it?
I believe so. I'm feeling good now. I'm over, but I have to say, you know, I've tried to get clean before, and it's months later, you know, because that's that devil hangs on your back forever.
Right, Ray?
If you were doing $40 a day, 30 days in a month, that's $1,200.
Oh, yeah.
That you're going to spend. And my guess is you spent more than that.
Some days. I mean, there'd be days I would go without just because I couldn't, you know, figure out a way to come up with cash.
Okay, so I want to hear about the withdrawal part. Tell me, okay, so let's say that you're just going, you've decided you're going to go into rehab and you get no dope.
Yeah, I've got no AIDS or anything. I'm currently I'm going to a clinic and I'm taking a substitute.
What are you taking?
Suboxone.
Can you get addicted to that?
Yes, you can.
Yeah. And how much does that cost on the street?
On the street, that is usually about $30 as well.
Yeah. So what?
You traded one for another, right?
Are you trading one addiction for another?
Well, yeah. Well, on the street, definitely. The preferable thing about it is you can't overdose. And it's, you know what you're getting, which is good.
So it's another kind of a prescription drug.
Yeah, it's another. But I guess the difference with it is, you know, where I'm in a program now is, I know, you know, that's big money. Some places, if you've got the money, they give it to you. It's the therapy that makes a difference, you know, because if you've got the substitute, you're not sick. You're not, you know, at the drop of
not having that withdrawal. Stuff.
Yeah, you're not withdrawing.
Do they withdraw you from this new drug on a slowly? Is that the way that? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, be weaned off of it, and then that way, the therapy, you know, you can work on yourself mentally and prepare yourself to say no in the future, without having to just fight the sickness at the same time.
Sir, I wish you all the luck in the world. I thank you for calling.
Thank you. I need it. I mean, of course, to me, you know, I came out to my whole family. You know, it was my dirty little secret. I came out to everybody, and that made it a lot easier to, you know, can't let them down now.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Good luck. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. If you have a question or comment for us, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. 4 minutes away from 10 o'clock, 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty at WVLKAM.com. We have Ray with us and Assistant U.S. Attorney Todd Bradbury. Ray?
Jack, I wanted to say last Sunday I was approached at church by a woman named Erin Young, who just stopped and said that she listens faithfully to this show, and she says what she's learning, she says it's teaching her about criminal law. For example, last week we talked about drug paraphernalia, and we stopped and we asked David Starsman, well, what does that mean? And he talked to us about that, and then we talked about the fact that the guy was throwing drugs out of his pocket as he was running away. And we talked about tampering with physical evidence. And so she thanked us for being educational. And so I wanted to tell Erin, keep listening. Todd, let's get to this business about how in the federal system do you connect a drug overdose to a particular person to the extent that you could possibly convict them of a homicide, of an overdose?
Well, under the federal statute, you have to prove the distribution.
Which is selling dope.
Selling dope. And then you have to prove that it caused the death. One issue that you have is multiple drug intoxication. Mm-hmm. You know, someone who's an addict or a junkie, they may not just be on heroin. They may be on heroin, cocaine, Xanax, any number of substances. So there are issues when it's a multiple drug intoxication.
If I were the dope dealer and sold Allison heroin, and Allison subsequently died from an overdose, and that the medical examiner would take Allison's blood and do some sort of a toxicology examination, and if it came out that she died from an overdose of let's do Percocets and heroin and cocaine, what does that do to your case?
Well, that's a number of issues, because in your hypothetical, you assume there is a tox screen, mm-hmm. that the blood has been collected and examined to determine what the substances were, because that doesn't always happen with overdoses. Generally, you would need an autopsy, mm-hmm. to prove that it was an overdose, which I think is changing, but historically, there would not be a request for an autopsy when it's an overdose.
Isn't that part of this new proposal in the state to try to deal with that? Is they're requiring the coroner to have an autopsy when there is a suspected overdose death. So that deals with that issue that Todd brings up, Jack, and that's the autopsy. Now, boy, that will really overload the medical examiner.
I was going to say,
office.
Yeah, do we have the money and time for that?
Well, probably not right now, but that's something that if the legislature wants, they're going to pass this law, then let's don't have any of these unintended consequences. Let's beef up the medical examiner's office, because, well, what they do is critical to the prosecution of homicides, whether they're drug-related or the traditional homicides where somebody gets beat up or shot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so that's one issue. Now, what happens in my hypothetical where I've sold Allison heroin? How do you prove that the heroin I sold, Allison, was the heroin that ultimately killed her, if the toxicology report says it's all a heroin overdose? Mm-hmm. How do you prove that?
Well, proximity. Mm-hmm. You know, that's certainly an issue in cases, because junkies may have multiple sources. They may have two or three people that they buy their drugs from.
Would that be common?
That's fairly common, although a significant number may have, you know, that one ace in the hole that they always deal with, that always has the drug.
That they trust.
That they trust, and they deal with that person. So, you know, lots of times phone records will be important. You know,
now,
a lot
of how that works.
Well, you know, a lot of the overdoses that we've had in Fayette County and other counties in the Eastern District tend to be younger people in their 20s. And anyone that has children of that age knows that they don't talk to each other anymore. They text. So even with their drug dealer.
Really?
So, you know, we do the forensic exam of cell phones from victim, from dealer, right, and find text messages.
Do they use a code of any kind, or are they just saying?
Yeah, like, you got any heroin?
Yeah, I mean, is that what they're saying? Or?
Well, one
they
of the
call it something.
One of the slang terms for heroin is food or dog food, and you may see that quite often. Of, I need some dog food, or they may say, I need a tenth, which is a tenth of a gram, like the caller was describing when he said he would buy a pack.
Yeah.
So you'll see things. like, I need a pack, or I need two packs, or a tenth, you know, anything like that. But that's fairly common to see that on a victim's phone. You may have witnesses, you know, lots of times addicts, they're not alone. Their girlfriends, boyfriends, other friends are also addicts and may be present for the overdose, or were present when the dealer distributed the drug to that person. So the closer in time you can put the distribution to the overdose, the better.
And these people that sell, I've learned through this show, are not users generally, are they? They're business people.
Generally not.
Yeah.
You know, in most of the conspiracy cases we have in federal court, the people at the very top, the distributors, the source of supply, generally aren't users. They're just bringing in mass quantities. Then you have people at the very bottom that are the addict traffickers that are, you know, they're selling to their friends and their associates and not really making any money. They're just supporting their habit.
I was going to ask that. What's the markup on this stuff? Is there, obviously there's money to be made, or they wouldn't do it.
Tons of money to be made.
Yeah.
A lot of the heroin that we see comes from Detroit and dealers. They can buy it for $60, $80 a gram in Detroit and bring it down here for distribution, and goes for about $300 a gram in Lexington.
Wow, that is.
Let me tell you a story that occurred. Gerald Young was a guy we prosecuted. Remember the killing that took place in the Perkins Pancake House lobby at several years ago?
Sure do.
Well, we prosecuted Gerald Young because he killed some shalosh guy in the lobby. And let me tell you what this shalosh guy that was killed did. He made two trips a week to Dallas to pick up cocaine. And he would pick up a kilo of cocaine, 2.2 pounds. And he would pay $1,350.
For 2 pounds?
For 2 pounds. And he would bring it back to Lexington and sell it for $2,700. And if you figured it, based on all of that, he was making about $1.2 to $4 million a year doing that, tax free. I mean, these people don't do W-2s
right,
for their dope dealing.
Right, and all cash, I guess.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We're taking a break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. Email jackpatty at wvlkam.com. You got something to say before we take this call?
Yeah,
there, Mr. Larson?
Todd is a math major. And he said, Ray, no, that's $13,500 a kilo, not $1,350.
Okay.
So there you go, Todd. Thanks for punking me right here.
Mary, good morning.
Hi. Excuse me. I had a friend that did an overdose. In fact, he just buried last week. Young man I watched grow up. He was 24 years old. And I was wondering, is this an automatic thing because of the overdose that the coroner or funeral home or whoever pursues this, or is this something that the family has to pursue to find out maybe who has done it, and what are the chances of finding that person that has sold him that? Now, this young man has been in and out of rehab several times, so, you know, it was a known thing that he was a precious young man, just got into the wrong thing. And I'm going to hang up and let you.
Well, wait a minute. Before you go, did he die?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
His funeral was last week.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, to go ahead and hang up and we'll talk about it. Well, first of all, the proof issues are in that case are significant. You got to know who did it. The coroner, if the coroner orders an autopsy, then that's one thing, and that tells you specifically the cause of this person's death. And then the police have to become involved. And if they don't have any sort of leads on it, then the likelihood of them being able to prove the connection that Todd has been talking about, or as they say in federal court, the nexus, then the chances of prosecuting it are just non-existent, really.
You're right. I mean, the criminal investigation has to begin immediately. I mean, ideally, after a 911 call is placed and regarding an overdose, and evidence would begin to be gathered at that point to try to locate who the dealer was, when the person obtained the drug, order an autopsy, toxicology, everything that would be critical in the prosecution, because oftentimes there can be overdoses and a significant period of time elapses before the police are even called. People get scared and flee from the scene. You know, they've been there three or four or half a dozen people using with the victim, and someone ODs and everyone scatters because they don't
want to
be involved.
One of the things that's occurred, and we've talked about this on the show, Jack, are friends will, if somebody is unresponsive after using drugs, a lot of times they'll just drive them and drop them off at the door of the emergency room and then get out of there.
I see.
That happens. So the caller, unfortunately, it probably is not going to result in a prosecution. But the that's where we're going with this law, is to try to improve the way we respond to these things, and hopefully in the future these kind of cases can be followed up on. So
you see much chance of that happening? Are you enthusiastic about that possibility?
I am. I think there are changes. Some of the things that are in the proposed law, some of those things are changing now. For instance, with the ordering of autopsies, with law enforcement, with how they approach it. You know, traditionally, an overdose death, the police would arrive and say, "Well, it's an overdose. There's nothing for us to do." Well, there is. There is something to do. You can go after the person that sold them this. And, you know, some of the blowback that I've heard from these cases is, well, you know, what's the next step? Sort of the slippery slope argument of...
Yeah, we're out of time. Thank you very much, Todd. Thank you, Ray. See you next time.
Update
from the Information Center next. Have a great weekend. I'll be back Monday.